Welcome to the Wealth Studying Podcast. This is episode 52. It's December 7th, 2014. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager at investablewealth.com. In each episode of the Wealth Studying Podcast, I try and teach you the 10 wealth building principles so that you can integrate and apply those in your life to build your personal net worth, to build your wealth, but more importantly, so that you can attain personal freedom. Money may not buy happiness, but it can buy freedom. And that's my mission here at the Wealth Studying Podcast, to help you become more free and have more liberty. Now, today's podcast, I've been promising for a couple episodes now that we would talk about interest rates and the effect that that's going to have on the market in these next coming weeks or months. And so I do want to do that today. In fact, I have to tell you, I earlier today recorded a version, but I went back and I deleted it. I didn't send it out. I got too down in the weeds. I got too complicated with things. It went too long. And that's not the purpose for this. I don't want to teach you, Econ 101 and really get down in the weeds on the numbers and how these things work. My desire is to give you some basic information so that you're armed with enough knowledge where you can look around and see what's going on in the markets and you can make informed decisions. So now what you're listening to now is my attempt to come back and take the complexity out of this. I'm going to talk at a very high level and I may be assuming you know things that you don't. I may be going over some people's heads. But if I get too deep or I get too academic, it's going to really take away from the intended message. So bear with me. If I go over some things quickly and you don't understand them, Google is your friend. Go to the internet, Google some things, go to places like Investopedia, look up some of the terms or some of the concepts I'm talking about if you don't understand them. You can let me know, provide me some feedback as well. If I get enough listener response, I can do another episode where we drill more down into the weeds on some of these concepts. But really, I want to talk high level right now. I want to talk the 30,000 foot level. So here we go. Interest rates are important to you and they're important to everyone, whether you're a saver, an investor, or a consumer, because interest rates drive the cost of money. And again, I'm not going to get into all this, how it works or why or anything like that. Just trust me on this. Interest rates affect, obviously, the monthly payment that you would pay on your mortgage or on a car that you purchase or on your credit card debt. If you're a saver, if you've accumulated a lot of wealth, if you're a senior citizen or an older person and you're trying to get a return or a yield on your money, that's going to be affected by interest rates. If you're invested in the stock market, what you really are is you're an owner in the company that you're invested in. And so likewise, that company is going to go out and it's going to have to borrow money to increase its operations or to make payroll or for whatever reasons, it needs to use that money to grow its business. And so again, the interest rates that the banks charge it are going to have an effect on the bottom line. And as you're being that owner in the company, you're also concerned with consumer debt. If consumers can't access debt to buy a new car, to buy a new home, or if they can access it, but the interest rate's too high, then that affects how much your company is going to be able to sell. And again, right, if you own a stock, then you're an owner in that company. So that's why I say interest rates affect everybody, buyers, consumers, investors, just everybody. The problem we're in, the riddle, what I'm calling the conundrum that we're in right now, is that rates have been drastically manipulated by the Federal Reserve. And again, I can't go into this. I did this in the episode that I had to go back and delete. I'm not going to go into the hows or the whys, but over the last 6 to 8 years, their intervention in the economy has been just unprecedented. Their quantitative easing programs that they've done, bailing out companies that have gone bankrupt, almost giving direct transfer payments from the taxpayer, from savers, that being transferred to reliquidate and give their member banks solvency, the Federal Reserve's attempt to reinflate the housing bubble so that again, the bank's balance sheets, all these mortgage money that they've loaned out, had the Federal Reserve not done that, there'd have been a massive bankruptcy across the financial institutions in 2007, 2008, 2009. Now, again, I'm not going to go and argue the facts whether that was right or wrong, or if you've been listening to the podcast for any length of time, I'm a free market person. I definitely have more of the Austrian school of economics, but it doesn't do us any good to debate what should have happened or what could have happened because that didn't happen. As investors, we have to deal with reality. So we're in the situation that we're in. And again, I apologize. I really feel like a desire to fully explain these concepts that I'm talking about, but I just have to talk about it at a high level. Just trust me when I say that the interest rates and the market have had unprecedented intervention by the Federal Reserve. And thus the landscape is so distorted and the markets have become so arbitrary that you can't always apply rational thought. You can't always apply traditional laws of economics because we're living in a distorted quantum economic world. And there's no precedence for this. We really can't go back and look at any other time in history when it's happened exactly this way, to this extent, with this amount of debt, not only in the United States, but in Europe, in Japan, in China. across the developed world, across the emerging markets. It's everywhere. Okay, I'm digressing. I'm already getting too much down deep in the weeds, and I'm getting on a soapbox. Again, just trust me on the fact that we're in totally distorted markets. Here's why this is relevant to you as an investor. We're at an inflection point right now. The third round of quantitative easing was stopped in October of this year. The Federal Reserve has built up over $4.5 trillion on their balance sheet. That's not going away. They're not unwinding that. They're continuing to reinvest those funds as they mature. They'll have that to continue to manipulate the markets, even if they don't have a QE4. That amount on their balance sheets, again, is historically unprecedented. That's about the value of all the 30 Dow Jones industrial stocks. So you think of all the major companies you know of, Procter & Gamble, McDonald's, Walmart, ExxonMobil, Visa, Chevron, Nike. I mean, all those big names, you take all those huge companies, all 30 of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, you add up all their market value, and that comes up to about $4.5 trillion. That's how much money the Federal Reserve has injected into our economy over the last 6 or 7 years, and again, that's why it's distorted things so badly. Well, we're at a point now where the economy seems pretty stable. The stock market's doing pretty well. Company earnings are at very acceptable levels. Valuations are a little bit high, but they're not unreasonable. The job market's improving. Wages, which have been depressed, are starting to move up a little bit. I mean, these are all signs of a growing economy. We'll probably grow maybe 2.2% this year. Again, that's nothing to write home about. In a recovery, we should be growing 4, 5, 6%. We can't even get to 3. Coming all these years through these last 6, 7 years through this recovery, we've never grown at 3%. We might grow that at that level next year. They've been promising it for the last 3 or 4 years, but we never seem to get much above, you know, right at either 2%. Again, this year we'll probably grow at about 2.2%. And you can dispute all those things I just talked about, whether the GDP numbers have been manipulated, whether the employment numbers are really what they're at, the inflation level. I'm not going to argue that. In fact, we're going to wrap up. We're going to come back to that at the end of this podcast. But the fact of the matter is, on paper, the United States economy looks like it's on track for stable growth, and it's vastly superior right now to any of the other economies in the world, with the exception of maybe Great Britain. The United States and Great Britain have been the two countries that have really pulled out of this recession well. So what this all means is that with a growing economy, the Federal Reserve is expected to start raising interest rates. You would normally raise interest rates in a growing economy when you've inflated too much. You want to come in and raise interest rates to kind of cool things back off. Well, we're really not growing at a huge rate where you'd want to cool it off yet, but the rates are so low. And again, I'm not going to get into the numbers and things like I had did in my previous version that I had to get rid of because I got way too complicated talking about Fed funds and overnight rates and how that relates to treasuries and things. And for our purposes, just trust me on this. The rates are just near zero. The Fed funds rate, the amount that the Federal Reserve loans to its member banks is pretty much at zero. They further drove down long-term rates like 30-year mortgage rates by coming in with their quantitative easing and not only buying government debt, but also buying mortgage-backed securities. Again, this is unprecedented in history for the Federal Reserve to have done that. So that's where all these distortions come from. And we're at that inflection point now where people are saying, well, surely now they're going to have to start raising rates. Well, the problem with that is that every time there's been a fear in the past that the Federal Reserve is going to raise rates or whenever they stop their quantitative easing, the market, the stock markets, has either crashed or had a major setback. You can go on my firm's website, investablewealth.com, and if you look at some of my most recent blogs, a couple months back, I talked about, this is the one chart you should know about. If you look at that on the right-hand side of my website, you'll see recent blogs, and you'll be able to see the one that talks about, this is a chart that you should be aware of. Look at that chart. It shows how the market dipped every time the Federal Reserve cut back on quantitative easing and there was a fear that they were going to raise interest rates. That blog, incidentally, would have been in October because that's when the Fed finally did quit their quantitative 3 easing. So look at the blog for October, and you'll see that chart if you're interested. So that fear's out there right now. Well, hey, if interest rates come up, that's going to affect the stock market. The stock market may crash. It may drop 20%, 15%, whatever. The other thing that we have to be concerned about in an environment of rising interest rates is that if yields go up, bond fund values, bond fund principles will go down. And this isn't a debatable thing. We can debate whether or not the stock market will be affected by a rise in interest rates, but it's no debate that the principal in bond funds will be affected because that's just a mathematical reality. The yield or the interest rate of a bond is inversely proportional to the price of that bond, to the value of that bond. So for example, if you have a 10-year government bond where you're getting a 2% interest rate and interest rates go up to 4%, the value of your bond fund will go down by 20%. So if you had $100,000 in there and you're thinking it's safe because it's in government bonds, you could lose $20,000. That's a reality that far too many investors don't understand, because for the last 30 years, bonds have never gone up. They've pretty much always gone down for the last 30 years. So people are walking around with this false sense of security that they can't lose money if their money is in bonds. And while technically that's true, if you owned the paper, if you actually owned a 10-year government bond and you had it locked up in your deposit box and you didn't cash it in for 10 years, well, yes, then in theory, you're not losing money. And when that matures, you'll get your principal back. But that's not the way 99.9% of investors invest. You're invested in bonds through mutual funds that buy these bonds for you. And those funds, their price is subject to go down, and it could go down drastically if rates go up high enough. Since we're not sure exactly how much the rates are manipulated now, we can't be certain if rates are going to go up 1%, 2%, or 3%. Again, if you're in a 10-year treasury and rates go up 3%, you'll lose 30% of your money. If you're in a 20 or 30-year treasury bond fund, you'll lose even more, because the longer the duration, the more the impact it has, the more the time value of money gets into that calculation. And so if you think you're in a long-term government bond fund that's very safe, you're being misled. And you're being misled because that's pretty much the way the financial industry pitches it to you. They tell you, oh, as you get older, you should be more in bonds. Bonds are safer than equities. If you're in one of those targeted retirement funds, it's your 401k plan, like a 2030, they'll say, oh, this is a 2030 fund. It's for everybody that's going to retire in 2030. And what we'll do for you, we'll manage your money as you get closer and closer to retirement. We'll take your money out of the stock market and we'll put it more into these bond funds. Well, those bond funds, as I just told you, they're very susceptible, particularly right now, to going down in value because our interest rates are at all-time historic lows. So the interest rates are more likely to go up than they are to go down or to stay the same. That means you could lose money in bonds. That's very important for you to know. And that's a major message that I want to put out in this podcast. That's why I don't want to get too down in the weeds about telling you exactly how the mechanisms work or what the numbers are. Just trust me on this. If we have rising interest rates and you're in bond funds, you're going to lose money. That's why over the last 18 months or so, as we've been anticipating whether or not the Federal Reserve would raise interest rates, it's been very hard for money managers like myself, where we're professionally managing client money and we're looking for safe places to put that money should we pull it out of the stock market. Well, right now, we're in this conundrum where there really isn't a safe place. 10, 15, 20 years ago, without a second thought, we could have taken that money out of stock equities, we could have put it into a short-term or mid-term or even a long-term bond fund, and we would have had a high degree of certainty that there was very little risk there. But that's not the case today. But see, the conundrum is even bigger than that. It's more complicated and complex. Because while we're all sure that most likely the Federal Reserve will be raising interest rates because the economy is improving, GDP is growing, unemployment is going down, the wages are finally starting to get some increases, and we're seeing some wage appreciation. At the same time, we're seeing very low, extremely low oil prices. Now, if you've been paying attention to my blog at all or listening to this podcast, you know that I'm very bullish. I'm very optimistic about lower energy costs. And I have been actually for several years now. I, in fact, was anticipating that we'd see these prices come down 2 years ago. They didn't. We've waited much longer than I thought it would take for the price of oil to collapse. But it has collapsed. It is collapsing now. We're down almost, it's fluctuating, but you know, anywhere from 30 to 40% we're down since the highs that we saw this summer in the price of a barrel of oil. That creates a rotation in the economy. Energy consumers will benefit from that. Obviously, the energy companies, the ExxonMobils, the people that are drilling and exploring for oil, the service companies that supply them, that's all bad news for them. And although they're a good chunk of the economy, they're not significant enough, I don't think, to pull the whole economy down. Not yet, anyways. Not at the current prices we're seeing. So I've been bullish and I've been happy to see these lower energy prices, because I think that's going to help more companies than it hurts. That's going to drive the stock market to new highs. And that's why I've been investing the way I have over the last, 6 weeks or so, and a much more optimistic rate than I was earlier in the year when I made investments. But again, here's the conundrum. Lower oil prices, lower energy prices, that's going to create deflation, right? By definition, you know that's going to happen. This whole economy that we live in is driven by oil, by energy. If the cost of energy goes down, then everything will have a lower cost basis. Because of competition, companies will lower the price of things. If you're going to the gas station now to buy gas, you know that the price of gas has come down. So that'll have a trickle-down effect throughout the economy. If prices stay low for a significant period of time, we'll see overall deflation. Consumers will pay less. They'll therefore buy more products. Companies that sell these products, although they'll be selling at a lower price, they'll also be selling at a lower cost basis, and they'll be selling more. because when you lower the price of things, more people buy them. You have a bigger volume. So that's all good news for the economy, but it's also deflationary. Now, I'm not an enemy of deflation. I'm a big fan of deflation. The Federal Reserve, the people in the government, the people that have a debt-based society, they all hate deflation. But I'm not. I'm a saver. So I like deflation. My life benefits greatly from deflation. I just see how my life has gotten better because of deflation in electronics and in the internet, things like that. I was just talking to my daughter, who was getting ready to buy another laptop computer. She bought her first laptop when she went away to college. I think that was like 2007. So that's something like 7 years ago. That was when she got her own personal, laptop computer. She bought a midline Dell computer at that time, a Dell laptop. It wasn't the cheapest one. It wasn't the most expensive one. It's kind of the mid-tier one that a college kid would go off to school with. And we were just talking about this the other day. She paid just under $1,000 for that. It was $900 and some for that computer. Well, today to buy that same level of Dell computer, that same kind of middle of the road Dell laptop, it's like $350. So in 7 years, the price has been slashed, almost two-thirds. And not only has the price come down, but the value has gone up because that Dell laptop today does amazing more things than that one she bought 7 years ago did. Right. And that's the same phenomenon I've seen all through my life. I think the most expensive computer I ever bought was the first one I bought, which would have been like 1987. I paid more for that desktop than anything I've ever bought since. And obviously it was the worst one. It was if you can even remember, this is in the days where it didn't even have an internal hard drive. It was a monochrome screen. It was one of those screens that was like black and orange. It wasn't even black and white. It was like an orange tint to the fonts. You could pretty much only use the thing for word processing and spreadsheets. I mean, that's what I bought it for. There wasn't even email in those days. Well, things have gotten better. That's deflation. Your money buys more value. I like deflation. But again, the Federal Reserve doesn't like it. The banks don't like it. The government, they don't like it because they're debt-based. But here's the whole point. That deflationary pressures of energy prices coming down that very well may offset any negative impacts that higher interest rates would have on the stock market. So we can't definitively go out and say, well, every time the Federal Reserve raises interest rates, the stock market goes down. It may not this time, because the higher cost of money may be offset by the lower cost of energy. Now, you're definitely still going to lose money in your bond fund. That's why I'm very concerned about people that are in bond funds and don't understand that relationship of the yield to the principal of the bond. So you'd still have a worry there, but there is no guarantee that rising interest rates are necessarily going to put a damper on this current economy that we're in. So that's a conundrum. That's a distortion. We don't know how to quantify that uncertainty. Here's another conundrum. Even though the United States and Great Britain have been cutting back on their quantitative easing, China, European Central Bank, Japan, just about all the other parts of the world as well, they're all ramping their quantitative easing back up again. Because the overall global economy hasn't been growing at the same rate as the United States. And while you may not think that affects you here in this country, it does. You see, because what they're doing is they're taking their quantitative easing money and they're bringing it into our country. Their money is less value in their country. Their interest rates are lower in their country than in ours. So they're taking their money. They're converting it to U.S. dollars. They're buying our debt instruments. They're buying our government bonds. They're buying our mortgages and they're investing in our stocks. As our U.S. dollar comes up, they make more money. As our stock market appreciates, they make more money. As we pay 2 and 3% interest rates on our bonds, they make drastically more money because their interest rates are significantly lower because their countries are still easing more. So that's a conundrum. We don't know how long their quantitative easings are going to stay in effect, and we don't know to what extent that money's coming back into our market. We know that it is, but we just don't know what volume of money will come in, and we really don't have a way to look at it from a historical basis because we haven't had this sort of distortion before. Not to this extent. Here's another conundrum. I mentioned the rising U.S. dollar. Well, the dollar is rising for those same reasons I mentioned. We're having higher interest rates than other countries. Our economy is improving better. We seem to be more stable, and so that naturally attracts more money here. Money goes where it's treated best. So money is fleeing places like Japan or Europe, and it's coming here. That's what's been happening for the last 6 months or so. Now, again, we don't know if this is going to keep up, but we know it has been happening. The U.S. dollar's appreciated about 10% since last April. Well, what impact does that have on our economy? It has a dual impact, right? It's a double-edged sword. For companies that import products, or for consumers that are buying imported products, the rising dollar means more deflation. If you buy a Toyota or a Mercedes, it's going to be potentially cheaper in 2015 than it would have been in 2012 because the U.S. dollar is higher. If you're a company that imports products from overseas, your costs are going to go down. So not only do we have energy prices going down, we have import prices going down. Those are both deflationary. Will that offset, will that counteract any type of rise in interest rates that the Federal Reserve may impose on us? You know, possibly, we don't know. On the other hand, that rising U.S. dollar also hurts our exporters, so that we know there's definitely going to be a lot of rotations in the stock market, just like we saw with the energy companies. The energy company stock prices have just crashed, coming down 20, 30, 40% in some cases. While at the same time, the S&P 500 over the past 6 weeks or so is up, you know, 5 or 6%. So the overall market has benefited, but specific segments, particularly that energy sector, has collapsed. Well, we're going to see those same things happen if the U.S. dollar continues to get stronger and gain more momentum. And all indications are that that's happening. But again, what level will that have on the overall stock market? Will that cause a Federal Reserve to tighten and to raise interest rates? Or maybe will they try and again come in and stabilize the economy and just leave interest rates where they're at? So we don't know. And again, we have no historical precedents to help us guide us through. There's no compass that we can look at to point their direction to true north. I mentioned about our borrowing costs. Our interest rates have naturally been going up here over the past few weeks. We're seeing our interest rates right now. Our 10-year treasury is at about 2.3%. And again, I promise I'm not going to get into the numbers. I got too complicated in that last episode I had to delete. But just let me give you a couple numbers for comparison's sakes. We're paying about 2.3% to tie your money up in 10-year government bonds. Well, how does that relate to the rest of the world? Well, Germany right now, 0.78%. Did you hear that right? 0.78%. That's to tie your money up for 10 years in German government-backed debt. You're not even getting 1%. At least in the United States, we're paying 2.3%. Germany, 0.78. France, 1%. Italy, 1.97. Spain has a similar interest rate to Italy, 1.8%. But you got to remember, Italy and Spain, I mean, they're basically on the verge of default. It was only 3 years ago we thought all Southern Europe was going to fall apart. Nothing's gotten better in those countries. But their governments are able to issue debt at less than 2%. So let's put that in perspective. Our government, which is much more stable than Italy or Spain, our country as a debtor is paying 2.3% interest to get people to loan money to America. While in Italy and Spain, which are indisputably weaker economies, they're paying less than 2% to borrow money. It makes no sense. And you can see why money would be fleeing those countries, why it's coming to the United States, why it's going into our equities, why it's going into our debts. So it's making our interest rates go lower, and it's making our stock market go higher. The Netherlands, they're under 1%. They're like Germany. They're 0.89%. Are you ready for this? Japan, 0.42%. Money is fleeing the Japanese island at unprecedented rates. They're inflating their money, and they're not paying any interest for it. Investors in Japan are doing everything they can to buy assets and equities and debt in other countries just to get out of Japan. And again, we don't know how long these foreign countries are going to be able to do their quantitative easing and to hold their interest rates at such low levels. But as long as they do, it's going to mean lower interest rates in the United States and a growing stock market bubble. And there's virtually nothing that our Federal Reserve can do about this. This is outside external money coming into our country. So here's another conundrum. I keep harping on the fact that the Federal Reserve has manipulated interest rates and they're artificially holding down our yields. They're making them too low, much lower than the market would normally have them. But let's look at the paradox here. What happens if the Federal Reserve really let the free market float interest rates to where they should be? Well, we can apply our economic theory, known economic theory that's been established over 100 years. We can apply that to know about where interest rates should be. And again, a rule of thumb, I'm not going to explain the math of the mechanisms here, but a rule of thumb is that a 10-year United States government treasury should have a yield that's about equal to the nominal rate of GDP, gross domestic product. Okay, that's the nominal rate. So right now, our nominal rate of GDP is somewhere between 4 and 5%. I think it's probably about 4.2%. Again, it depends whose numbers you believe and what's true and what's false, but let's just call it 4%. Well, our rates right now, the U.S. Treasuries are paying right now 2.3, and just a few weeks ago they were practically at 2. They were about 2.1. But let's just for our purposes say they're at 2.3%. 10-year Treasuries, 2.3%. They should be at least 4. So that's at least a 1.7 delta, at least a 1.7% difference. Well, if you remember at the beginning of this podcast, I told you how much money you could lose if interest rates went up. So if you're in a 10-year bond fund right now and rates weren't distorted and they went up to where we would think they should be historically based on 100 years of economic theory, you'd be losing about 17% of the money that you have in your bond fund. And again, that's why as a money manager, I'm very concerned about where I can put my money for safety. But let's look at this conundrum again. Well, if 10-year treasuries were at least 4%, and again, I'm saying at least 4%, they could definitely be higher. And that wouldn't be historically unprecedented. I mean, all through the 90s, particularly late in the 90s, we were seeing, 6% interest rates. And the economy was doing just fine then. But let's just say we see, 4% 10-year treasury rates. Well, so what would that mean to the housing market? What would a 30-year mortgage be? Well, again, I don't know. That fluctuates, but we know it's obviously going to be more than 4%. If a 10-year government bond is at 4%, a 30-year treasury on a mortgage is going to have to be at 5%, maybe 6%, 6.5%. Now, here's the question. If interest rates were allowed to reach the natural level that the market would set it at, if the Federal Reserve wasn't distorting and interfering with our interest rates, and we allowed them to float up higher like they should be, to be around 4%, and that now means that a mortgage is going to be 5.5%, 6%, maybe more, what do you think that would do to the housing market? All these people that have gone out and gotten mortgages at 3% and 4% and under 5%? Because of the Federal Reserve's interjection into the market, they've been able to, stabilize this real estate market. They've been able to reinflate it so the banks haven't gone out of business. So all that bad debt's been, papered over. And even though interest rates have come up, right now I'm looking at the Freddie Mac website. Average 30-year mortgage right now is about 4%. So what would happen to house sales if it went up to 5, 5.5, 6%? Obviously those home sales would go down, would see less people able to afford to purchase a home. Their monthly payments would be too high. Although this real estate market has stabilized, like I said, it's not spectacular. It doesn't need a fire hose to cool it down. We're well below historic, high building rates. And so if we take that rate up to 6%, that's 2 points higher than we are right now. That's a 50% increase in mortgage rates. What would that do? It would chill. It would just throw cold water on the real estate market. The market would probably, I don't know if it would collapse, but most likely we might see a collapse in the real estate market again. So again, here's the conundrum. The Federal Reserve, for the last 7-8 years, historically unprecedented levels of distorting our interest rates and keeping them too low. But yet, if they're actually allowed to float up to the rate they should be, if they really should be where the market says they should be, well, what would happen? The economy would fall apart again. Because real estate, the whole building and construction industry, it's a huge major component of our economy. It always has been. That's why the government's always subsidizing and promoting home ownership. So will lower energy costs and the strength of the U.S. dollar, would that be able to counteract the effect that a 5.5-6% mortgage rate would have on the building industry? I don't think so. So again, here's the conundrum. Rates are manipulated and they're too low. The free market hasn't been allowed to set the rate. But if the free market did set the rate would be too high, the economy would collapse and rates would come down. So with all this manipulation that the Federal Reserve's done, have they set the interest rate at exactly the right price? Well, see, that's the conundrum. That's the problem. That's the riddle. We don't know. What we do know is that there continues to be a lot of malinvestment. There are too many companies buying back their own shares of their stock, which gives us a false sense of security. It looks like earnings are higher than they are. Home prices, real estate prices are all most likely inflated higher than they should be. So all this malinvestment means that the stock market may be priced higher than it should be. It maybe means real estate prices should be priced higher than they should be. But remember, at the beginning of this podcast, I told you, as investors, we can't invest in a perfect world in things that, the way we want them to be. We have to invest in the way things are. And we live right now in an Alice in Wonderland economy. Everything's distorted. Everything's backwards. We don't know what's up is up. Maybe up is down. Maybe there's a real estate bubble. Maybe there's an equity bubble. Maybe rates should be at 6%. No, that would collapse the economy. Maybe they have to be at 2%. We know rates are distorted, but we just don't know how long the Federal Reserve and all these other central bankers can keep all these balls in the air. How long can they juggle them? See, the problem is if we just bury our heads in the sand, our money will devaluate and we lose opportunity cost. If we go out and buy gold, well, what happens? Gold's trading for under $1,200 an ounce. So we can't put our money in precious metals, we'll lose. We have to take the risk to buy real estate, to be homeowners, to be in the stock market. The problem is we have to be prepared to hedge our bets and find a way to protect ourselves should there be a realignment. That's the conundrum. And that's why interest rates are so important and they're something that you should understand. So here's the takeaway that I want you to get from this podcast. Number one, be aware. Interest rates are manipulated, but it's a conundrum. And in reality, we might be at the right rate we should be because the economy may not actually be able to support a higher interest rate. But we just don't know. There's uncertainty. It's also very likely, and this is important for you to understand, that the Federal Reserve may have lost control. With all the foreign money coming into the United States now, The Federal Reserve may not have the ability to raise or lower interest rates the way they could have in the past without all that foreign money flowing in. But just because the Federal Reserve may have lost control, it doesn't necessarily mean that rates are going to skyrocket. It could be just the opposite. We could see a rate collapse. Remember, Germany, Netherlands, they're all under 1%. We're at 2.3. We could cut our interest rate in half and would still be above Germany. And the Fed may not be able to control that. The other thing I want to point out, many of you may have been thinking this earlier on when I was talking about the GDP, the unemployment rate, the inflation rate. Those numbers also have been so manipulated. The formulas have been changed. The way they calculate things, it's different than it was 10, 20 years ago. So we really don't even know if we're dealing with historic numbers. And again, that might be why the Federal Reserve has lost control, because they're dealing with data that's not realistic, so garbage in, garbage out. They could be way overshooting or undershooting the economy. We just don't know for sure. So be cautious. Be aware that you can lose money in bond funds. Know that the stock market is very susceptible to high upward changes in the interest rates. You should be very nimble with your positions in the stock market. I am definitely overweighted in the market right now, but I realize that if interest rates go up too fast, too far, we could see a major pullback. I'm conscious of that. You should be as well. The biggest takeaway that I want you to have, and this is what I've kept mentioning throughout this podcast, is I don't know. I don't know if the strength of the dollar and the deflation from energy prices are going to be able to counteract higher interest rates. I don't know if the market can support higher interest rates. It may just collapse it and cause interest rates to get lower again. I mean, we just don't know these things. But it's not only me that doesn't know. No one knows. You're going to see talking heads on TV. You're going to hear media pundits. You're going to hear all these people giving you all these scenarios and situations, and one will be black and one will be white. There's no certainty. Right now, no one has any idea to really be able to factually predict what's going to be happening in 6 months, where interest rates are going to be at, where the stock market's going to be at, what kind of bond yields we're going to have, where the global economy, whether it will be recovering or whether it will cool off further. No one knows. And so what you need to know as an investor is to not be taken in by these charlatans that pretend to know what they're talking about. You need to be watchful. The only person that's responsible for your wealth is you. Be diligent, have situational awareness, pay attention to things like the interest rates, whether they're moving up or moving down. Be conscious of what's happening not only in our stock market, whether it's going up or whether it's going down, but also look around at the global economy. These factors are all going to determine whether you make or lose money over the next 6 months. So be watchful. I will do my best to keep you informed. I'll keep providing you with content in these podcasts. But again, it's ultimately up to you. You're responsible for your own wealth. Pay attention. Don't stick your head in the sand. Don't panic. Don't let your emotions take over. These next 6 months could be a great opportunity to make a lot of money and get a lot of returns in the stock market. But at the same time, we could just as easily see a pullback of 20 or 30%. My friends, we live in interesting times, so let's just sit back and take things as they come and see what we can do to make money and preserve our wealth. I hope I didn't disappoint those of you that wanted me to talk more about numbers and give more explanations, but I wanted to keep it at a high level. I wanted you to have those takeaways. Be cautious. Be aware. Watch the interest rates. As always, if you have comments, questions, concerns, you can reach me at wealthsteading.com. If you haven't done so, please go out, subscribe in iTunes or Stitcher. I would really appreciate it if you haven't given us a review. Consider doing that. Go out and say something about us in iTunes. It's greatly appreciated. In the next podcast, I'll come back with a market review. We'll reassess and reevaluate how this rally's progressing, and I'll tell you about rotations in my own portfolio and a direction I'm thinking about taking, and it may surprise you. So you're going to want to hear that in the next episode. Until then, as always, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.